Just for a second reflection this evening. First, we've seen Christ as his model of humility, and now what that means for each one of us here present. His example must speak to us. It must be something that changes our lives, the way we see life, the way we live life. God, when he came to earth and made known who he is, he did everything with a purpose. And so in seeing this example that we saw now, what does that mean for me? How should it affect my life? And so now it's our need for humility in order for Christ to be born into our lives. I remember my first year studying theology, I had the grace of accompanying a group on a pilgrimage to the Holy Land. And there we arrived to Bethlehem and went to the Church of the Nativity. And it's a famous church, not just because Christ was born there, but a lot of people actually know it because it's a very small entrance. As in, unless you're probably under 4 feet, you're forced to duck your head down in order to get into this church. And they've left it that way. Reflecting that image, unless you're willing to stoop, to bow your head down, you won't be able to enter in and see where Christ was born. That need for humility. The message of Christ was revealed to the shepherds, the simple people, and the wise men, the learned. Those who knew they knew nothing, and those who knew they didn't know everything. Only if we're willing to learn will we be able to discover Christ's presence, his birth. And just know that the opposite of humility is pride, self-love. How many times in life the easy thing is what I feel like, what I want, and we think that's going to make us happiest. But trying it time and time again, we find that it doesn't fill us. The moments when we have been happiest in life is when we have given. And if you don't believe that, just from here on out, think about that. When am I happiest? And so what do I need to do in order to be humble so as to receive Christ when he comes, so that he can find a place in my heart? How can I live out this humility that he calls me to? I think the best way to help us understand this is to share a story with you. Be a little patient with me, it's a long story, but I think it expresses perfectly how we can live this humility and how Christ can be born into our hearts. I title this story, Paw and the Rifle. Paw never had much compassion for the lazy or for those who squandered their means and then never had enough for their necessities. But for those who were genuinely in need, his heart was as big as all outdoors. It was from him that I learned the greatest joy in life comes from giving, not from receiving. It was Christmas Eve, 1881. I was 15 years old and feeling like the world had caved in on me because there just hadn't been enough money to buy me the rifle that I wanted so bad that year for Christmas. We did the chores early that night for some reason. I just figured Pa wanted a little extra time so we could read the Bible. So after supper was over, I took my boots off and stretched out in front of the fireplace and waited for Pa to get down the old Bible. I was still feeling sorry for myself, and to be honest, I wasn't in much of a mood to read scriptures. But Pa didn't get the Bible. Instead, he bundled up and went outside. I couldn't figure it out because we had already done all the chores. I didn't worry about it long. I was too busy wallowing in self-pity. Soon, Pa came back in. It was a cold, clear night out, and there was ice in his beard. "Come on, Matt," he said. "Bundle up good. It's cold out tonight." I was really upset then. Not only wasn't I getting the rifle for Christmas, now Pa was dragging me out into the cold, and for no earthly reason that I could see. We'd already done all the chores, and I couldn't think of anything else that was needed doing, especially not on a night like this. But I knew Pa was not very patient at one dragging one's feet when he told them to do something. So I got up and put my boots back on and got my cap, coat, and mittens. Ma gave me a mysterious smile as I opened the door to leave the house. Something was up, but I didn't know what. Outside, I became even more dismayed. There in front of the house was the work team, already hitched to the big sled. Whatever it was we were going to do wasn't going to be a short, quick little job. I could tell. We never hitched up the big sled unless we were going to haul a big load. Paul was already up on the seat, reins in hand. I reluctantly climbed up beside him. The cold was already biting me. I wasn't happy. When I was on, Pa pulled the sled around the house and stopped in front of the woodshed. He got out and I followed. "I think we'll put on the high side boards," he said. "Here, help me." The high side boards? It had been a bigger job that I wanted to do with just the low side boards on. But whatever it was we were going to do would be a lot bigger with the high side boards on. When we had exchanged the sideboards, Pa went into the shed and came out with an armload of wood. The wood I'd spent all summer hauling down from the mountain, and then all fall sawing into blocks and splitting. What was he doing? Finally, I said something. "Pa, what are you doing?" "You've been by the Widow Jensen's lately?" he asked. The Widow Jensen lived about 2 miles down the road. Her husband had died a year or so before and left her with 3 children, the oldest being 8. "Sure, I'd been by, but so what?" "Yeah," I said, "why?" "I rode by just today," Pa said. Little Jakey was out digging around the woodpile, trying to find a few chips. "They're out of wood, Matt." That was all he said. And then he returned and went back into the woodshed for another armload of wood. I followed him. We loaded the sled so high that I began to wonder if the horses would be able to pull it. Finally, Pa called a halt to our loading. Then we went to the smokehouse, and Pa took down a big ham and a side of bacon. He handed them to me and told me to put them in the sled and wait. When he returned, he was carrying a sack of flour over his right shoulder and a smaller sack of something in his left hand. "What's in that little sack?" I asked. "Shoes. They're out of shoes. Little Jakey just had gunny sacks wrapped around his feet when he was out in the woodpile this morning. I got the children a little candy, too. It just wouldn't be Christmas without a little candy." We rode the 2 miles to Widow Jensen's pretty much in silence. I tried to think through what Paul was doing. We didn't have much by worldly standards. Of course, we did have a big wood pile, though most of what was left now was still in the form of logs that I would have to saw into blocks and split before we could use it. We also had meat and flour, so we could spare that. But I knew we didn't have any money. So why was Paul buying them shoes and candy? Really, why was he doing any of this? Widow Jensen has closer neighbors than us. It shouldn't have been our concern. We came in from the blind side of the Jensen house and unloaded the wood as quietly as possible. Then we took the meat and the flour and shoes to the door. We knocked, the door opened a crack, and a timid voice said, "Who is it?" "Lucas Miles, ma'am, and my son Matt. Could we come in for a bit?" Widow Jensen opened the door and let us in. She had a blanket wrapped around her shoulders. The children were wrapped in another, and were sitting in front of the fireplace by a very small fire that hardly gave off any light, much less heat. Widow Jensen fumbled with the match and finally lit the lamp. "We brought you a few things, ma'am," Pa said, and sat down the sack of flour. I put the meat on the table. Then Pa handed her the sack that had the shoes in it. She opened it hesitantly and took the shoes out one pair at a time. There was a pair for her and one for each of the children. Sturdy shoes, the best ones, shoes that would last. I watched her carefully. She bit her lower lip to keep it from trembling, and then tears filled her eyes and started running down her cheeks. She looked up at Pa like she wanted to say something, but it wouldn't come out. "We brought a load of wood too, ma'am," Pa said. Then he turned to me and said, "Matt, go bring in enough to last for a while. Let's get that fire up to size and heat this place up." I wasn't the same person when I went back out to bring in the wood. I had a big lump in my throat, and much as I hate to admit it, there were tears in my eyes too. In my mind, I kept seeing those three kids huddled around the fireplace and the mother standing with tears running down her cheeks and so much gratitude in her heart that she couldn't speak. My heart swelled within me and a joy filled my soul that I had never known before. I had given at Christmas many times before, but never when it had made so much a difference. I could see we were literally saving the lives of these people. I soon had the fire blazing and everyone's spirits soared. The kids started giggling when Pa handed them each a piece of candy, and Widow Jensen looked down with a smile that probably hadn't crossed her face for a long time. She finally turned to us. "God bless you," she said. "I know the Lord Himself has sent you. The children and I have been praying that He would send one of His angels to spare us." In spite of myself, the lump returned to my throat and the tears welled up in my eyes again. I'd never thought of Pa in those exact terms before, but after Widow Jensen mentioned it, I could see that it was probably true. I was sure that a better man than Pa had never walked the earth. I started remembering all the times he had gone out of his way for Ma and me and many others. The list seemed endless as I thought on. Pa insisted that everyone try on the shoes before we left. I was amazed when they all fit, and I wondered how he had known what sizes to get. Then I guessed that if he was on an errand from the Lord, that the Lord would make sure he got the right sizes. Tears were running down Widow Jensen's face again when we stood up to leave. Pa took each of the kids in his big arms and gave them a hug. They clung to him and didn't want us to go. I could see they missed their Pa, and I was glad I still had mine. At the door, Pa turned to Widow Jensen and said, "The missus wanted me to invite you and the children over for Christmas dinner tomorrow. The turkey will be more than three of us can eat. We'll be by to get you about 11. It'll be nice to have some little ones around again. Matt here hasn't been little for quite a spell." I was the youngest. My two older brothers and two older sisters were all married and had moved away. Widow Jensen nodded and said, "Thank you, Brother Miles. I don't know what to say. May the Lord bless you. I know for certain that He will." Out on the sled, I felt a warmth that came from deep within, and I didn't even notice the cold. When we had gone a ways, Pa turned to me and said, "Matt, I want you to know something. Your Ma and me had been tucking a little money away here and there all year so we could buy that rifle for you, but we didn't have quite enough. Then yesterday, a man who owed a little money from years back came to make things square. Your ma and me were real excited, thinking that now we could get that rifle. And I started into town this morning to do just that. But on the way, I saw little Jakey out scratching in the woodpile with his feet wrapped in those gunny sacks, and I knew what I had to do. So, son, I spent the money for shoes and a little candy for those children. I hope you understand. I understood, and my eyes became wet with tears again. I understood very well, and I was so glad Pa had done it. Just then, the rifle seemed very low on my list of priorities. Pa had given me a lot more. He had given me the look on Widow Jensen's face and the radiant smiles of her three children. For the rest of my life, whenever I saw any of the Jensens or split a block of wood, I remembered. And remembering brought back that same joy I felt riding home beside Pa that night. Pa had given me much more than a rifle that night. He had given me the best Christmas of my life. Count your blessings every day, slowly and thoughtfully. And so as we have this moment before our Lord in the Eucharist, and we ask Him, how can we receive you into hearts? What more can I do so that you can find place within my heart? Learn from this story. True humility, true love is in giving, not in receiving. Let our Lord in the Eucharist speak to your heart. Let His generosity attract your heart. Move you to want to give. Move you to that true happiness which only giving can bring to us. This evening has been an opportunity in which Christ has called us to set aside some time to be with Him. And know that He's going to bless you for your generosity. He knows that He will be able to find room within your hearts when He comes on Christmas morning.